ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to the Hour of Flower. Anne Jones and Belinda Smith are here to count down the top 10 wildflowers from around Australia, as voted by you. You're with Radio National for Science Week.
G'day, it's Dr. Anne Jones from What the Duck with you. And you are in for a treat. From Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country, we are coming to you live for Radio National. It is the week of science's rite of passage, National Science Week. And what do you have at every single rite of passage? You have births, deaths, marriages, debutante balls. You have flowers. And this is the culmination of the floral celebration of the nation. Our flower baby is all grown up. And joining me in the ABC studio is my friend and co-host, Belle Smith, who is with the science show on the ABC, a legend, a floral enthusiast, and do you get hay fever?
Well, I live in Melbourne, Anne, so yes, I do. I spend about a week every November snottier than a daycare. But, you know, like you said, we are here today for a very special reason. We're here to count down to Australia's most amazing wildflower. And these flowers truly put the wild in wildflower, mm-hmm. right? So the polls have closed, the votes have been tallied, and this year we got nearly 73,000 votes. That tells you a lot about how much we care about our flowers, right? But before we get started, we want to hear from you, listeners. Who did you vote for? Send us your flower picks. And we also want to know, if Costa Georgiadis from Gardening Australia was going to get a tattoo of a wildflower, what should he get and why? We're going to call him a little bit later in the countdown to tell him what you reckon he should get inked. Call us on 1300 22 5576 or text 0418 226 576.
You're listening to the Hour of Flower on Radio National for Science Week, counting down the top 10 Australian wildflowers, as voted by you.
So, and obviously we are here because we love flowers. We're crazy for the paper daisies. We're gluttons for billy buttons. We go gaga for the waratah. And, you know, what's not to love? They smell great. Well, most of them do. They look great, well, you know, depending on personal preference, but there is so much more to them than what they look and what they smell like. So let's go back to basics. What even is a flower, Anne?
I am thrilled to introduce our very special Hour of Flower expert commentator, the commentary box of a football game. Never smelt as good as it does right now. He's a highly respected author, broadcaster, botanist, garden expert. He loves algae. Mm. And he has held senior roles in three of the world's leading botanic gardens. Welcome, Professor Tim Entwistle, dead set legend. How are you going?
I'm going really well, Belle and Anne. And what a delight to be talking about flowers and to be given this really, really difficult first question as
well. Well, let's start with an easier first question then. Who did you vote for in the top 10?
Well, I did vote, and I've already confessed this on air, so look, it's not a new piece of information, but I voted for the flying duck orchid, not to keep Anne happy.
Oh, but it did.
Well, it did. Well, that as well, but also I love orchids, and this one just, you know, I just think it's got this such a crazy look, because it does actually look like a flying duck. And it's one I go searching for out in the bush. So I love it there too. So, yeah, it ticks all the boxes.
Okay. But, Tim, take us back to high school biology, right? Because here we are celebrating wildflowers, but I think we do need a refresher about what a flower actually is.
Yeah, look, they're the sexy bits of a plant. So really it's the sex organs of a plant, which we call male and female. And the male are the pollen and the female is the ovary and ovule. So it kind of sort of makes sense. And all the rest of the flower, those kind of contrivances, which in fact Charles Darwin called them years and years ago, is to get the pollen from one flower to another. So that can be via wind or water, or most often, and what the more interesting flowers come from, is when an animal is involved, so a bee, a bird, a beetle, that kind of thing. So if you look at a basic structure of a flower, you do have those sex organs in the middle. So you've got the things, the ovary, you've got the things producing the pollen, the stamens. Outside that, though, you have these layers, including the petals, which are generally the colourful, pretty parts, and outside that kind of green, what we call sepals. Mm-hmm. So it's all these concentric kind of rings that form what we call a flower.
But those sexy bits are right in the centre, generally. The bullseye.
They are. Well, it's where they're trying to get that insect, if it's an insect or an animal of some kind, they're trying to get that in there. Not only there, but to get that pollen to rub onto part of its body so it then takes that somewhere else. So it's all about ways to get the vector there, the pollinator, and then ways for it to carry that pollen somewhere else. Mm.
So flowers have these biological sex parts, the male parts and the female parts. Can flowers be either male or female?
They absolutely can, and certain plants will have male and female plants, or they'll have male and female flowers on the same plant, or they can sometimes have bisexual flowers, as we call them, which are both on the one plant, and then sometimes male and female mixed up. And the really interesting ones are things like daisy heads, we've got the Murnong in our list today, and it's a kind of daisy, and they, inside this flowering head, have usually a mix of male, female, and sometimes bisexual flowers. They can all be there together.
Wow. It's always so much more complicated than you think because, you know, here we are thinking flowers, this is one of the simple joys in life, but it turns out it's one of the complex joys in life. Before we kick off in with the countdown, what is the difference, Tim, between a wildflower and just a flower?
Okay. The wildflower in this context and what we're talking about today is one that grows, we would say, kind of naturally in Australia. So it's one that's out there growing by itself, mm-hmm. looking after itself and reproducing. Other flowers, we need to care for them in our garden and we grow them. So wild is really out there amongst in its natural environment.
Now, Belle, we received an email just before saying that we've blown the ABC Radio National budget. We've got 10 prize packs of flower stuff to give away. Now, this is going to be a tea towel. It's got the illustrations of our top 10 flowers on it. And there is a tote bag in which you can carry around all of the dishes so that you can wash your dishes en plein air. And how are we going to choose 10 winners from all of the adoring Australian public? Well, Belle, you know me, I'm silly, and I have mocked up the sound of one of our flowers. You
no
ready?
No way.
That is the sound of a trigger plant. Now, the trigger plant is one of those ones that triggers and it slaps an insect on the butt with a big paddle of pollen, right? So that's the sound of it. Now, when you hear the trigger plant trigger, you are at some point between 12:30 and 1 p.m. You are going to hear that sound, okay? And the first 10 people who text in are going to get the prize pack. Here's the sound again. Between 12:30 and 1, listen out for that and get a prize.
And what sort of pollinator makes that little woo-hoo sound?
And you should have seen the size microphone I had to use to interview that pollinator. Now, did you vote out there? Did our poll fill your cup? Did you learn something new during Science Week this year, during our flower poll? And most importantly, which flower should Costa get as a tattoo? Now, he hasn't agreed to getting a tattoo, but last year at the Logies, I totally got his number. And so later, we are going to call him and just jump on cold. We're going to pitch the flower tats to mark this momentous program. Call us on 1300 225576 or text us right now, 0418 226 576.
It's International Science Week, and this is the Hour of Flower on Radio National.
Oh, Belle,
Yeah.
We've already got text coming in. Oh. We've got a flower vote. I choose flying duck orchids as orchids are the best, obviously. Mm-hmm. Bring on spider and wasp orchids. Yeah, both brilliant types of orchids.
Nice.
We do have brilliant terrestrial orchids in Australia.
We really do. Yeah. It's amazing that they look like other things as well. Terrific.
They do, like our flying duck. But now, last but definitely not least,
it's time for number 10.
Oh, no, Belle.
Oh, no, what?
We are starting the whole show off on a downer for Belle because bladderworts have come in at number 10.
No.
Belle's favourite.
Oh, gosh. I threw my whole weight behind bladderwort. Clearly it wasn't enough to get bladderwort even off of bottom spot.
What did you like about it?
Well, I like so much about the bladderwort. It is a carnivorous plant, and I have a soft spot for plants which seem to reassert themselves in the food chain, right? So it's quite a lovely flower. They come in different colours. They look quite delicate and a bit like snapdragons or orchids as well. We've been talking about orchids. But their real superpower is where their roots are supposed to be. So these guys live in boggy, wet, moist conditions.
Same.
And they have things called runners, like you, maybe.
No, that's you, Belle. No,
that's me. And they have little tiny bladders that hang off of these runners. And these are little tiny vacuum traps, essentially. Mm. So the plant will pump water out of the bladder, and the bladder is sealed with a trapdoor. And then just say like a little nematode worm comes along, trips a trip hair, the trapdoor flies open, slurps in the little nematode worm, and the door slams shut behind it, and it is trapped, and it is digested. And then the bladderwort just spits out the bits it didn't need and then resets the trap.
I think we can take lessons from the bladderwort. Mm. You can be strong and independent. You can eat your meat and still be beautiful.
That's right.
Our Professor Tim Entwistle, our resident for today expert, I actually wanted to ask you, what is a wart? Because it's called a bladder wart, and I understand the bladder bit because Belle just explained it, but a wart?
Yeah, a wart, from my understanding, is one of those kind of medicinal things where plants used to have a relationship to something in the plant. So it'd be a liver wart would kind of fix your liver. And now that's a botanical kind of perspective. It'd be great to have a kind of a medical terminologist come and tell us. But nevertheless, that's my understanding. It's fixing that.
Wow, that's really cool.
That's so cool.
I actually didn't know that. So it sort of means that sometime in the past it may have had some sort of medicinal use. Whether effective or not, we have no idea.
And do not try this at home.
Do not try this at
home. No, never do that. Can I just say that I love the flower, even though we talk a lot about their bladders, the flowers are, they're called fairy aprons, and when they're en masse, they're just spectacular. They're beautiful little fine pink and blues, and this one's blue, but they're just beautiful.
They are lovely.
And it's such an underrated ecosystem, the, you know, boggy bits, the swampy bits. People think that there's just nothing in there, and it turns out some of the most beautiful things we have in Australia are right there in our swamps. Mm-hmm. Now, Belle.
Mm-hmm. We would like to hear from you listeners. Text in. What should Costa get tattooed on his body if it was a wildflower, and why are you choosing that particular wildflower? And also, we have 10 prize packs to give away after 12:30 when you hear that trigger plant sound. The first 10 to text in after hearing that sound will win a prize pack. It's a tote bag and a tea towel for National Science Week in the ABC.
We never get that sort of thing, so come on.
That's right. This is a very rare opportunity for some sweet ABC merch.
Get those thumbs ready.
Call us on 1300 225 576 or text 0418 226 576.
Which wildflower is Australia's fave? The countdown is on. This is the Hour of Flower on ABC Radio National for Science Week.
All right. Let's keep going with this countdown, as voted by the Australian people.
Now for number 9.
And it's the creamy candle.
The creamy candle.
The creamy candle.
Congratulations.
What a lovely name.
Number 9.
Yeah. You might know it as the bush candle. They're widespread. They're found just about everywhere in Australia except for Northern Territory. And they like sort of dryish areas where the bladderwort was a boggy lady. The creamy candle likes grasslands, alpine areas, woodlands, that kind of thing. And they have beautifully delicate, creamy white star-shaped flowers, and they produce a sweet scent most strongly at nighttime.
Yeah, that's what stood out to me was the nighttime scents to lure in those nocturnal pollinators.
Yeah, like moths and things.
Which is just beautiful. But you know what else is beautiful?
Tell me.
Talkback callers. And we have one here, Tim. Is in Willoughby in Sydney. And Tim, you've got an idea for Costa's tattoo, do you?
Yeah, hi guys. Just loving the flower hour. So cool. Great. But yeah, the flying duck orchid, I think that would just, you know, go well on the old bicep, maybe. Get a bird of paradise.
Yeah, because he could make it flap if he tenses.
Yeah.
Tim,
yeah,
do you have any flower tats?
No, I'm tat-free, but, you know, always open-minded, thinking one day maybe, and that maybe this will be it. Maybe if Costa gets one, I'll get one too.
Oh, Costa.
There we go. All the pressure's on.
I'm writing that down. No, you said it live on radio. Tim, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, guys.
Now, I think what we should do next is tell you how to get in touch because we really do want some excellent ideas for Costa. I'm going to absolutely spring it on him. He gave me his number. He probably thought he was going to get invited on my show. And instead, I'm going to recommend that he gets a tattoo of a flower. Which tattoo should Costa get? The man loves flowers. He literally wears flowers about his person. And also, a reminder, listen for the trigger sound. That is going to be between 12:30 and 1, and we are going to give away 10 prize packs. All you have to do is when you hear that sound after 12:30 is text in and we will give you prizes. Mm. It's just going to be so much fun. This is the Hour of Flower. Call us on 1300 225576 or text us on 0418 226 576.
Australia, land of sweeping plains, flooding rains, and frickin' amazing wildflowers.
Couldn't have said it better myself, really. So, Anne, in the lead up to today's momentous countdown, we've both been digging into the first flowers on our respective programs. You can find these stories on The Sideshow and What the Duck on ABC Listen. Because, spoiler alert, plants didn't always have flowers, did they?
No, they didn't. And I think we both went into this because it is one of those things that people, it always sort of blows their mind that plants were around before flowers were around, right? And the first flower goes back, like, you know, the first fossil evidence is like 130 million years.
Dino flowers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if plants were doing okay before flowers came on the scene, why do we even have them now and why are they so prolific? So to help us unpack all this, I'd like to welcome our next guest, Dr. Chantelle Doyle, who is a conservation botanist at UNSW. Sean, thanks for coming on the program. Which flower did you vote for?
Oh, hi, Belle. Hi, Anne. I voted for the trigger plant, the Stylidium.
Fantastic. Why is that?
Well, so I have a child and I just love engaging kids in nature. It's pretty hard to get their attention these days. But my favourite thing to do when kids come over to our house is go and stick something in the trigger of the Stylidium in our front yard and get the kids to trigger them all off. And they are just blown away. I mean, they do torment the flowers a bit, but they love it.
Look, flowering plants currently make up, 80 to 90% of all land plant species. It's a huge proportion. Why do they absolutely dominate the landscape?
Oh, I love this question. And this is one of these questions when you first ask it, you go, oh, well, that's obvious. And then the more you unpick it, the more complicated it becomes. And yes. I think your discussions earlier this week have really illuminated that when you look at the fossil record. But maybe I'll just go with the simple answer and then we can dig a little bit deeper if you want.
Sure. Give me the simple answer.
Yeah, simple answer. So flowers exist because it's the best way for them to be able to transfer or get pollinators to do the hard work for them and to transfer pollen from one individual to another with the most minimal amount of effort in terms of developing their pollen.
I mean, flowers can be quite expensive energy-wise. So, I mean, the benefits must really outweigh that energy expenditure though, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it's just because it means that you can get a much greater assurance of fertilization. And when you get fertilization, you get seed production. Mm. Whereas the gymnosperms or the conifers, which dominated the landscape in the early, 400 million years ago, or 300, 400 million years ago, they had a kind of just a scattergun effect, right? They would just release pollen and who knows where it goes. It just floats on the wind.
Okay, so it's a much more targeted way of pollinating then with the flowers. So what would we lose if plants stopped flowering?
We would probably lose almost everything.
Gosh.
I can think of one food supply. If we're thinking about delicious meals, I can think of one food that we would get from a non-flowering plant. So pine nuts as a gymnosperm. We could still have some pine nuts. but yeah, all of our grasses, wheat, corn, maize, all of our fruit, our food basically. Mm. Maybe we could eat seaweed. Which is an algae actually. I can't think of anything else. Maybe Tim has some suggestions, but it would be quite catastrophic these days if plants stop flowering.
Yeah, yeah. We rely on them so much more than just beautiful bouquets to hand out at weddings. Thanks so much, Chantel.
No worries. Thank you.
Please keep listening in, Sean, and everybody here on Radio National with the Hour of Power. Well, flower.
Flower power.
Power, you know what I mean. You know what, Belle? We need to keep this going. And the next one in the countdown is...
Okay. Let's keep the countdown going.
In at number 8.
It's Rickettsia scoparia. Tassie's flower. So this Rickettsia scoparia is only found on the Apple Isle. And only above 700 metres. So these are cold weather specialists.
Cold and sort of pretty high altitude, really, Australia.
That's right.
You know, this is sad for me because number 8, this is set fairly low down in the list and we haven't had a Tasmanian Prime Minister since John Lyons. So the part of me that loves the cold and wants the best for Tassie was cheering on Rickettsia scoparia. But Tim... How do these plants actually manage to reproduce when they spend most of their time covered in snow?
Well, look, they send up a fairly large flowering spike, if you like, with a few flowers up above the snow. And you're quite right there, but they're found in these sort of, I suppose, flat high altitude areas often in Tasmania that you can walk through. So my experience with... Which I call it Rickettsia, which I know we're all stuttering over this name.
Oh, we're going to get text about this.
It's named after a French guy called Richet. So it probably should be Rickettsia if we wanted to be really fancy. But look, whatever you like. But it produces these kind of white flowers. It probably attracts a whole bunch of pollinators, birds, insects, even reptiles sometimes. There are a few plants that are pollinated by reptiles. There's a famous one in Africa, which isn't on your list, unfortunately, because we're not in Africa. But reptiles do as well, and ants. So just about anything will pollinate flowers.
Including humans. And let's keep it moving along in 7th place.
We're up to number 7.
Tell me.
Citrix, the star flower. Not a galactic result, no. But I actually think that this one could be the president of the Australian Flower Congress because it's a great communicator.
Oh, how so?
Well, maybe Tim can explain this better than I, but it has a little bit of an ability, right, to be able to change colour. Tim, do you know how this works?
Yeah, well, I don't know how it works chemically, except but I do know there's quite a few plants that do this where you change from one colour to another to attract the pollinator in, but then you change colour so it's not attractive, so it then leaves. So it goes off to find another colour that is attracted to it. So, for example, birds often like red, so you see flowers that are red that attract them. And for insects, which mostly pollinate this particular plant, it's a yellow sort of colour that attracts in the little bees, the native bees and insects, and then it changes colour and they decide they don't want to be there anymore.
So is that why yellow and red are so overrepresented in flowers?
Yeah, look, it is. It's quite complicated. There's been some lovely work done in high altitudes too, where you start to get more yellow flowers appearing. So it depends where you are, and that depends on what pollinators are around. So it depends whether there's more insects and whether those insects like particular colours. And look, birds, even though we think about them liking red, they also like other colours, but they like red more than insects like red. So it's kind of all complicated as
Tim,
always.
Tim, do you have a colour you're attracted to? Asking for a friend.
I think I quite like red.
Ooh, he's a bit of a bird. He's a bit of a bird. All right, that is Professor Such Tim Entwistle, our resident big botanical brainiac. And you are listening to Radio National, where it is in the East Coast, 12:30. I'm Dr. Ann Jones, and with me in studio here is Belle Smith, co-host of The Science Show, but co-hosting The Hour of Flower with me today. And we want to decorate the minds of Australia with floral wallpaper. Send us your flower pics, and most importantly, send us your idea for Costa Georgiadis' new tattoo. He doesn't know he's getting it. We're just going to sneak it up on him. And just lay it out.
I'm sure he'll love it.
I'm sure he will. We've got lots of ideas coming in. I'll get through to some of them soon. But for now, give us a call, 1-300-225-76 or text us on 0418-226-576.
A person wrote their will on the back of the cornflakes packet.
What makes a will legally binding, and why the answer may surprise you?
He was driving his tractor and he rolled it. It killed him, but not immediately. He had time to write what he wanted done on the tractor fender, and that was allowed.
Join me, Damien Carrick, and Professor Prue Vines from UNSW for a special episode of The Law Report, 5:30pm Tuesday on ABC Radio National and anytime on ABC Listen.
Oh, Professor Prue Vines, we had her on What the Duck, and she told me that you're not allowed to really leave your house to your dog. That's why you should go and subscribe to What the Duck. That's why you should go and subscribe to The Science Show right now, because we talk about all sorts of good things, like what sort of flower Costa Georgiadis should have tattooed upon his body. We've got Helen in Brisbane. Helen, how are you? Good afternoon.
I'm great.
Costa, what have you chosen for his next tattoo?
Well, I think it would go with his beard, because he's lightened his beard and the water would be wonderful in his beard and it would be great on his wrist or wherever.
That's nice. Any particular species of wattle?
Oh, Cootamundra. I love
beautiful.
There's so many different wattles, so many different shapes and things.
Yeah. I just had the one ready to go. Fantastic, Helen.
And it smells so beautiful. Yeah. I just love the smell of wattle. I wish they could make a perfume of it.
Oh, yeah. Stunning.
It would be the best seller.
I reckon it might be, Helen, for some people, and there's others who have absolute gripes with wattle, but we could get to that in another program. Thank you, Helen, in Brisbane.
Love it.
And
love it.
Remember that we are talking about flowers, particularly for ABC and National Science Week, the poll.
That's right.
The poll. I think that we have lots of texts coming in. Costa needs, from Jeff, a tattoo of the purple bearded orchid for obvious reasons. Jeff, absolutely correct.
Fantastic.
We've got an unnamed person who says Costus comosus for the Costa tattoo. I'm going to have to put that into an internet search engine because I have no idea what that
Me
is.
Neither.
But it is bang on for the name. Remember that you too can get in touch with us here at Radio National. Text us on 0418 226 576.
It's National Science Week on Radio National, and this is the Hour of Flower.
And in sixth place,
announcing number six.
We have the underground orchid.
Oh, I wish I had an applause track.
Oh, it's because such a good one.
This is such a weird, weird plant. This is something that has basically jettisoned its leaf. It's jettisoned its roots. It's basically gone all in on the minimalist trend.
Big time.
And it even barely shows its face.
But codependent with a fungus. So it's a complicated little system, this one.
Tim Entwistle, professor, algae enthusiast, author. Have you ever actually spotted one of these?
No. But there's one very similar to it, which not on your list, called Thysmia, which is not an orchid, but it also grows underground as well. And I have seen those. So the underground orchid, the Rhizanthella, I've never seen. They're mostly found, interestingly, by people looking for truffles and fungi. So they're not usually people looking for plants.
Yeah, and I read also that they sometimes get, you know, uncovered when people are doing land clearing activities. So these might be in places that we just are not aware of. And I thought, Tim, that it looked a little bit like the movie special effects department got involved with the flower, because it literally looks like a gunshot wound coming out of the earth.
I suppose it does, yes. I mean, it doesn't have to, it's not colourful, so you're not really trying to attract anything from a distance. And that's an interesting thing. You think about it doesn't need big petals and bright colours and perfumes. It's mostly insects that are in the litter that are going to pollinate it. So they're crawling around and looking for slightly sort of musty smells as well. So it's really just a little cluster of flowers at about ground level with a whole lot of bracts, which are not really parts of the flower. At the start, we talked about what a flower was. These bracts are kind of special leaves that are wrapped around it, and they also help to, you know, get the insects in, get the pollen on, and then get them moving.
See, this is what I love about being a broadcaster, is every single time you come into work, you realise how silly you are, because I did not know that bracts were a thing. Thank you, Tim. And let us get right on to the next one.
Yep, that's right. We are halfway through the countdown.
It's time for number 5.
And it is the trigger plant.
The trigger plant.
Yes, that was Sean's favourite. And it's a bit of a fan favourite just generally, because it spreads pollen, as Sean said, by donking pollinators when they land on the flowers.
Yep. Hey, this is smack bang in the middle.
Oh.
See what I did there? You can thank me later. These are so cool to see in the bush, right? Because they literally come to life. They respond to you. Yeah. And on that, Professor Tim Entwistle, what the hey is going on there? Because, like, we think of plants, right, as these things that are sort of inert, maybe even. Like, we know they grow, we know they move with the breeze, but this is a movement of the plant's accord.
Yeah, plants generally move very slowly, and that's they do move, but they move so slowly that we kind of think they're not moving at all. And so we've heard, you know, Bell did a great description of actually how this one works, and this little trigger, and you just need to touch the base and it fires off, and the response is in milliseconds. So we're talking about 15 to 30 one thousandths of a second, so very, very quick, and then they reset. And there's a few plants around that do things like this. I mean, the flying duck orchid we've already mentioned hasn't come up yet, of course. But that one, you know, bangs an insect on the back with its big duck head.
And holds it down.
And holds it down, yes, that's right. So that's a very nasty one. But there's other flowers overseas. There's a dogwood that fires off pollen really quickly.
What, like a little explosion?
Yeah, it is. And they've only been really able to track it once they've taken a video of it and slowed that down, because you can't actually see what's happening. It's so quick. It's like a bullet. It's like a bullet in a rifle. So that happens really quickly and fires it onto something, which then, you know, finds it very difficult to get that off because it's fired in so hard. There's a smoke bush that does the same in Western Australia. There's a spitting flower in China. A few of these plants find ways to do things fairly quickly so that they can get the pollen on the insect while it's there. Because you imagine how quickly these things sometimes fly around. It's really hard to get them, the pollen from the flower to them.
It's amazing.
I'm sending out our condolences to all of the insects that had to die during the evolution of the flowers that smack them on the bottom.
There's got to be a sweet spot where they can smack them hard enough that the pollen sticks, but not so hard that you damage the pollinator.
That's the secret, exactly. And figs is a whole weird area which we won't go into today, but they almost kill the insect. It sort of limps its way out to the next flower. But there's enough get there. And so it actually works, but only just.
Well, Tim, you stick around because we've still got more to come here on Radio National with the Hour of Flower. And we have Lynn from Sorrento in Victoria who has called in, keen with ideas for Costa's tattoo. Lynn, hello. What's your idea? Hello, Lynn. Can you hear me?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Hi.
Hello.
I'm in the garden.
Oh, you're in the garden. That's perfect. That's perfect. What's your idea for Costa's tattoo?
Well, I think a spider orca because it's my favourite. And I think it's delicate and he pops up everywhere just like they do.
He really does. Oh, my goodness. That is a brilliant one. And then we've also got Jenny in Tassie. Jenny, how are you going?
Yes.
What's your idea for Costa?
My idea for Costa is the Blandfordia punicea, which is also known as Christmas bells. The Blandfordia flower in Tasmania is just such a brilliant bright red colour, and it flowers around Christmas time, end of December, beginning of January, and it's just an absolute delight. If you're walking in the mountains there in amongst all the greenery, to see this brilliant red and yellow flower, bell-shaped. It's just absolutely beautiful.
Jenny, what a description. It was poetic. I loved it.
Stunning.
And we're whipping through them because we don't have much more time, and I'm going to call Costa shortly. We've got Ken in Canberra. Ken, good afternoon. What do you think Costa should get tattooed about his person, and where should he get them tattooed?
Okay, I really like the flying duck orchid.
Yeah.
Going back to the 60s with those little wall hangings, I think you should get three tattooed.
Oh, that's great.
All in descending size.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yes, I think you should get it across his little white bottom.
Oh, my goodness,
I've
Ken.
I've been waiting for someone to say bum.
You know what, Ken? I should have downloaded the swearing duck from What the Duck to make sure that we didn't get any naughty things. And we'll quickly go to Jennifer from Queensland. Jennifer, how are you? Which one do you think Costa should get on his body?
I think a tillandsia would be ideal.
Ooh, what's that?
It's an air-loving plant, and it's delicate and unusual.
Oh, just like...
Sounds like us, really.
Yeah, maybe that's one for us and not Costa. He's a bit more robust than we are. Thank you to everybody who has texted in. We are shortly going to get Costa on the phone and I'm going to absolutely, you know, just lay it out there for him.
Yeah, great.
We've got all these ideas. One of them's going to have to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, Belle and I might have to decide on the run. Who is going to win Costa's tattoo? And we're just going to have him up in a minute. Ooh, what's that?
Oh gosh.
What is that?
There's a fly in here.
Oh, could that be a pollinator?
Someone needs to shut the studio door.
Oh, who was in here before us?
Oh, no.
It's not us.
Life matters. God.
It was a pollinator and the trigger plant.
There you go.
Quick, you better text in right now, 0418-226-576. The first 10 people will be getting the ABC Radio National and ABC Science Unit Science Week Flower of the Year tea towel.
Very limited edition.
Lots of words, though. and I think that we're just going to call Costa right now. Got his number. And just excuse me while I just get him on the line. Oh, gosh, I hope he picks up after we've done this. All this homework.
Hope he's not listening.
Yeah, I hope he is listening. Costa, where are you?
Thanks for calling.
Oh, we're bloody...
Hello?
Oh, Costa, there you are.
Costa.
Sorry, Costa. It's Ann Jones here from Radio National. How are you going?
Ann Jones, what a pleasure that is. How are you?
Look, I'm pretty good, Costa, but I admit that I am live on radio right now. My co-host, Belle Smith, is with me. We've got the Hour of Flower going. We're counting down the top flowers in Australia. And, Costa, we've also had Australia speaking, the great democracy that we are, to tell us which flower you should get tattooed on your body. Do you have any tattoos?
Really? Yeah. Tattoo. I'm yet to sort of venture down that road. Probably because I just think there's too much unfollicled real estate. You know? Like, I think the tattoo artist would be struggling because the forest.
Yeah, we need something with bold outlines, don't we? Yeah, look, we've got so many ideas. Costa, I kid you not, if you actually do want a tattoo, we could potentially get a whole botanical book tattooed on you. We've got native violets, Xanthosa rotundifolia, that's the southern cross. That's a good one for a tattoo, isn't it? The underground orchid, that is ancient and wise, perfect for Costa's tattoo. That one's from Roger from Emu Plains. The flame tree, red. Red waratah on his right shoulder. That's very specific. The purple bearded orchid. Costa, are any of these, are these sounding good?
Yeah, they're all sounding good. I mean, I suppose if I were going to do it, I mean, just putting one flower on would be a bit favourite child sort of thing.
Well, it would.
I think
but
I need to put a meadow.
Well, yeah, that's a great idea. And Costa, we did have somebody who suggested three flying duck orchids. Like they're the mallard ducks on a 1970s wall flying across. What he said was your little white bottom. Radio National has not heard this sort of language for many years, Costa.
Yeah, I think I might be cancelled for inciting a demise of standards. Well... all of those. And it's just a case of, you know, where I could put them and, you know, then whether whether Gardening Australia. Look, I don't think I'd have any pushback from our executive producer because I'm saying it's the power of flower.
Yeah.
I'm representing Gardening Australia on a new level.
That's right. Permanent level.
That is the reality.
You're often seen wearing flowers. Why do you do that?
Yes. Well, look, the Logie and Actor Awards where I do that, like last Sunday was another opportunity. I love it because it's a chance for me to work with floristry students, like the TAFE Floristry Cert 4 students. I go in there, I take them the clothes, and then they come up with the design and I wear it. And people ask me questions and I talk about the fact that, you know, floristry is such a wonderful career pathway and it's creative, even if it's not a career, as a hobby and just as a pastime to enjoy nature and enjoy the seasons and all these flowers that you're celebrating today with the countdown. Like the more we know them, the more we see them, then the more we can understand and then protect the landscapes that they grow in.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Costa, thank you so much for being a good sport. And we'll keep a list of all of these for you just in case, okay? So save my number in your phone, Costa.
And I can't wait. And who knows? Maybe that's my Christmas gift this year.
Oh! Now we're going to keep this moving because in fourth place...
Up next, number four.
The Murnong.
The Murnong.
This is a beautiful flower. And
truly.
It looks like a weed, though.
It does look a bit like the old yellow dandelion.
It does. So expert commentator for both the red carpet and the floral carpet, Professor Tim Entwistle, how do you tell the difference, just really quickly, between a Murnong and a weed daisy? Oh,
we've lost him.
We might have lost him. That's all right. I can tell you the difference.
Tell me.
No leafy rosette at the bottom.
Aha.
That is all right. Let's go through because we're running out of time. I'm going to go straight to number three, and that means that we are so close to the end.
So close. These are the podium finishes, the top three flowers, collected more than half of all the votes between them, if you can believe it. So they are strong favourites.
Getting close now. It is time for number three.
And taking the bronze, Anne, it's Mulla Mulla.
Oh, you might know these as like the bunny tail flowers.
Yeah.
They're very fluffy and just gorgeous.
So beautiful. And they are tough cookies. They thrive in soils without too much in the way of nutrients. And they're totally fine with extreme heat. Mm. They're incredible.
Yeah. Sounds like I need them in my garden. And I think they are ones that you can actually get commercially.
Yeah.
So, okay, let us... across now live to our expert, Tim, because Tim, Tim Entwistle, we are down to the final two. We have the Flying Duck Orchid and the Flannel Flower. What's your pick?
I put my cards on the table, haven't I? But I do actually, now that we're down to the Flannel Flower, could I make a change? Because
just stab me in the heart, Tim.
I know. But look, they are such fantastic. You can grow these in your garden, a little bit trickier to grow. And they look like a what's great about them is they look like a daisy, but they're not. They're actually in the carrot family. So one of the things I would say, if it wins, people are to go out, find a flannel flower and just crush a leaf and see if it smells a bit like a carrot.
Oh, there you go. Some homework for us.
Wow.
I love this. And Tim, look, I hope this poll and the countdown has whetted people's appetites to learn more, not just about the flannel flower and its carrotiness, but all the wildflowers in their part of the country. I know it's definitely given me a newfound respect for our native flora. So if listeners want to learn more about our top 10 and native flowers in their area more generally, where should they go?
Yeah, look, go to your local botanic garden. I have to say that I've worked in many botanic gardens, but they're great places to learn. Just do it. Just walk through them. Go to your local nurseries. Go to the specialist nursery that sort of likes to grow plants in your local area as well. And do look up sites like each state has its own flora. So if we're looking at wildflowers, New South Wales, Western Australia, you go through each state, you'll be able to find it. They'll have a little identification kit. They'll have pictures and information and start to get your local plants, start to look after your local plants and grow a few in your gardens, which will help bring in pollinators.
Very important.
Now, thanks, Tim. Now, we have waiting for us online, Mira.
That's right. Mira Jordan, who is doing a PhD at UNSW, which combines their love of plants and adventuring. Sounds perfect, Mira. Why should the flannel flower win?
Oh, that's a great question. So Actinotus is the genus of flannel flowers, and they occur both like in Western Australia and in Eastern Australia. And there's actually one species that also occurs in cliff lines outside Alice Springs.
Wow! And
yet to see it, but hoping in the future that I'll get out there.
Send us donations for the trip, please.
Yes, please. So Actinotus helianthi, which is the sort of more commonly known flannel flower from Eastern Australia. It's the one that's pictured on the website here. And it, along with many of the other species in this genus, has a really strong relationship with fire. So they grow in a post-fire environment. Basically, when the fire comes along, there's a lot of smoke. And then after the fire is finished and the rain comes, it washes that smoke into the soil. And those seeds that are in there from the Actinotus helianthi, they germinate using the chemical signals from the fire. So you tend to see after the fire that there's just a lot more of the Actinotus helianthi around, and they can occur in these really beautiful fields of white snowy flowers.
Oh, how cool. It sounds like they should be called the phoenix flowers,
That's a good one.
And there's another species in the genus that's called Actinotus forsythii that actually is obligate, and it's pink and it's also very cool.
There's so much to learn about these, Mira. Hold on. We are going to announce the winner out of the top two shortly. But representing the flying duck orchid, which is the other flower left, we have Professor Kingsley Dixon from the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Western Australia. Kingsley, thank you for joining us.
Well, and a good morning or afternoon to you guys over in the east.
Why should the flying duck swoop in for the win?
I've loved them since I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's a flower only a mother would love.
Don't say that.
It's small, it's brown, but gosh, it packs a punch. I think it's actually one of the world's greatest flowers with more contrivances to fool nature, whether it's the pollinators, whether it's the fungus in the roots. And, you know, what they've done is they've moved on. It's not about colour and movement. They're just brown and they're happy in their skin. So I think they're a monument to the little plants of the world that, in their own way, tell extraordinary stories of this great continent.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And look, love that you think a mother would love it, but none of us want to think of our child being the ones that are so deceptive.
No, not at all.
I didn't teach them to do that.
Where'd they learn that from?
On Radio National, you're joining myself, Dr. Anne Jones, and Belinda Smith, and we also have an expert, Tim Entwistle, joining us, along with a representative of the Flannel Flower, mm-hmm. who is named Mira, and we also have a representative of the Flying Duck, Orchid, Kingsley, and the big moment that we've all been waiting for.
Announcing number one.
It's the Flannel Flower!
Australia's applause. Mira, how does it feel to take out a pole that you didn't even have to fight for?
Well, it feels great, but as a botanist, I think any flower winning I would have been happy about.
That's so nice.
Yeah, you've been media trained by that. Oh, but Mira, what does this sort of recognition mean for a flower?
Well, I think it's great for flowers and for plants in general. I think it's fantastic to see people being more engaged with not just the sea of green, but all of the individual little bits that are in the green. Mm. And I think it's also really cool when you have a species that's so integral with fire to also bring in that engagement with, you know, the impact of climate change and changing fire regimes. Yeah. And it's just a great iconic species.
And I do love flannel pyjamas. So I'm not
so
too,
cozy.
Yeah, you know, I'm not too mad at that. Mira, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Do stick around. Kingsley, I'm so sorry that you came second in the nation. It's still a silver medal.
Still pretty good.
But dear.
For the, you know, my little ugly ducklings, they'll just have to fly again somewhere in the bush. But, you know, there's a flying duck for every occasion.
Well, there sort of is, isn't there? There's more than one species of flying duck orchid.
Across Australia, 15. On the West Coast, of course, we've got more than you guys.
14. Ouch.
It's 29, almost 30 species. And one actually made it across to New Zealand, must have gone on a holiday.
Oh, the flying duck flew over. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Not sure how it gets on with its pollinators because, of course, these all use a remarkable sexual deception of unsuspecting male wasps. Anyway, that's a metaphor for lots of discussions.
It totally is. You can hear more about it on What the Duck as well. And look, once more, let's go to the botany equivalent of a 400-game player, Professor Tim Entwistle. How are you feeling, Tim, after the game?
Look, commiserations to Kingsley there and all those tiny little ducks that must go around pollinating those flowers. I hear it's not ducks, but anyway, thank you, Kingsley. And for you, Anne, the winner has Brax. Remember we mentioned Brax right at the start?
It's my new favourite word.
Yeah. So
my
other
favourite word is pobblebonk, but Brax is pretty cool as well.
No pobblebonks, but plenty of nice, beautiful Brax attracting those pollinators in. So, a worthy winner. Great. Love the flannel flower.
So, you know, the numbers were pretty stark with this poll. Mm-hmm. The top three took out the huge majority of the votes and the rest of them were sort of stragglers, right? So we had the Mulla Mulla coming in at 10,342. Then we had the Flying Duck Orchid at 14,370. And then Flannel Flowers at 16,567, taking it out by a good 2,000-ish margin. It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been an hour of power flower.
Sure has.
How are you feeling about it now, Belle, that it's all almost done?
I feel a little bit sad, but I also feel glad that we've had these amazing flowers brought to our attention because these aren't your sturt desert peas. They're not your wattles. They're ones that might fly under the radar, flying duck radar perhaps. And so I guess going out, walking in the bush, I'm going to be a bit more, I don't know, observant as to what's around me, especially now we're coming into spring. It's going to be prime time for wildflowers.
It totally is. Orchid season is upon us, so you know where I'm going to be. That's crawling around looking for tiny little things. There's so many things coming in on the text line. People who are happy, people who are sad. We've got Kathy who says, "Hi, Anne and everyone. I voted for the Murnong. It's such a humble flower and it was so important to First Nations people as a food source. Love the Murnong. And I'm so glad that you all kept us company here on Radio National." You know, it's not very often that we in the Science Unit get to make live radio, and it's been an absolute pleasure to actually have some of you, the audience, interacting with us today and getting to say hello to you. And we've still got people coming in trying to win a prize pack. I think you might be too late by now, but you never know. Just keep them coming in. And I'm Dr. Anne Jones. With me on the desk has been Belle Smith from The Science Show.
Thanks for having me, Anne.
And on Radio National, remember you can find us on ABC Listen as well.
That's right.
Please go and subscribe to our podcasts.
Yep.
Find us on social media. Tell us about your favourite flower.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.